air to the left. Over the intercom, Edmund said, "They seem to be warm. I feel heat on my arms and legs."
"That's not right," Barnes said. He turned to Tina. "Tell her to get out of there."
Tina ran from the cylinder toward the communications console. Norman could hardly see Edmunds anymore. He was vaguely aware of a dark shape, moving arms, agitated. Over the intercom, she said, "The smear on the faceplate, it won't go away. They seem to be eroding the plastic. And my arms, the fabric is..." Tina's voice said, Jane, get out of there."
"On the double," Barnes shouted. "Tell her on the double."
Edmunds's breathing was coming in ragged gasps. "The smears... can't see very well. I feel... hurts. My arm's burning. Hurts. They're eating through..."
"Jane, come back. Jane, are you reading? Jane."
"She's fallen down," Harry said.
"Look, you can see her lying..."
"We have to save her," Ted said, jumping to his feet.
"Nobody move," Barnes said.
"But she's..."
"Nobody else is going out there, mister."
Edmunds's breathing was rapid. She coughed, gasped.
I can't... Oh, God!"
Edmunds began to scream. The scream was high-pitched and continuous, except for ragged gasps for breath. They could no longer see her through the swarms of jellyfish. They looked at each other, at Barnes.
Barnes's face was rigidly set, his jaw tight, listening to the screams. And then, abruptly, there was silence.
The next messages. An hour later, the jellyfish disappeared as mysteriously as they had come. They could see Edmunds's body outside the habitat, lying on the bottom, rocking back and forth gently in the current. There were small ragged holes in the fabric of the suit. They watched through the portholes as Barnes and the chief petty officer, Teeny Fletcher, crossed the bottom into the harsh floodlights, carrying extra air tanks. They lifted Edmunds's body. The helmeted head flopped loosely back, revealing the scarred plastic faceplate dull in the light. Nobody spoke. Norman noticed that even Harry had dropped his manic affect. He sat unmoving, staring out the window. Outside, Barnes and Fletcher still held the body. There was a great burst of silvery bubbles which rose swiftly to the surface.
"What are they doing?"
"Inflating her suit."
"Why, aren't they bringing her back?"
Ted said. "They can't," Tina said. "There's nowhere to put her here. The decomposition byproducts would ruin our air."
"But there must be some kind of a sealed container."
"There isn't," Tina said. "There's no provision for keeping organic remains in the habitat."
"You mean they didn't plan on anyone dying?"
"That's right, they didn't." Now there were many thin streams of bubbles rising from the holes in the suit toward the surface. Edmunds's suit was puffed, bloated. Barnes released it, and it floated slowly away, as if pulled upward by the streaming silver bubbles.
"It'll go to the surface?"
"Yes, the gas expands continuously as outside pressure diminishes."
"And what then?"
"Sharks," Beth said. "Probably." In a few moments, the body disappeared into blackness, beyond the reach of the lights. Barnes and Fletcher still watched the body, helmets tilted up toward the surface. Fletcher made the sign of the cross. Then they trudged back toward the habitat. A bell rang from somewhere inside. Tina went into D-Sill. Moments later, she shouted, "Dr. Adams, more numbers!" Harry got up and went into the next cylinder. The others trailed after him. Nobody wanted to look out the porthole any longer. Norman stared at the screen, entirely puzzled, but Harry clapped his hands in delight.
"Excellent," Harry said. "This is extremely helpful."
"It is?"
"Of course. Now I have a fighting chance."
"You mean to break the code?"
"Yes, of course."
"Why?"
"Remember the original number sequence? This is the same sequence."
"It is?"
"Of course,"
Harry said. "Except it's in binary."
"Binary," Ted said, nudging Norman.
"Didn't I tell you binary was important?"
"What's important," Harry said, "is that this establishes the individual letter breaks from the original sequence." Here's a copy of the original sequence, Tina said, handing them a sheet. 00032125252632, 032629, 301321, 04261037, 18, 3016, 06180821322, 29033005, 1822, 04261013, 08301621371, 1604, 08301621, 1822, 03301313432. Good, Harry said. Now you can see my problem at once. Look at the word. 000321, and so on. The question is, how do I break that word up into individual letters? I couldn't decide, but now I know. How? Well, obviously it goes 3, 21, 25, 25. Norman didn't understand. But how do you know that? Look, Harry said impatiently. It's very simple, Norman. It's a spiral reading from inside to outside. It's just giving us the numbers in... Abruptly, the screen changed again. Narrator's note. The spiral that previously appeared on the screen in binary code has now changed into a spiral displaying the equivalent sequence, the original sequence, in ordinary decimal numbers. Return to text. There, is that clearer for you? Norman frowned. Look, it's exactly the same, Harry said. See? Center outward. 00032125255. It's made a spiral moving outward from the center. Yet? Maybe it's sorry about what happened to Edmonds, Harry said. Why do you say that? Norman asked, staring curiously at Harry. Because it's obviously trying very hard to communicate with us, Harry said. It's attempting different things. Who is it? It, Harry said, may not be a who. The screen went blank, and another pattern appeared. Narrator's note. This pattern shows a spiral presenting the original sequence of coded decimal numbers repeated several times. Unlike the previous spiral patterns, this spiral progresses from the outside toward the center. Return to text. All right. Harry said. This is very good. Where is this coming from? Obviously from the ship. But we're not connected to the ship. How is it managing to turn on our computer and print this? We don't know. Well, shouldn't we know? Beth said. Not necessarily, Ted said. Shouldn't we try to know? Not necessarily. You see, if the technology is advanced enough, it appears to the naive observer to be magic. There's no doubt about that. For example, you take a famous scientist from our past, Aristotle, Leonardo da Vinci, even Isaac Newton. Show him an ordinary Sony color television set, and he'd run screaming, claiming it was witchcraft. He wouldn't understand it at all. But the point, Ted said, is that you couldn't explain it to him either, at least not easily. Isaac Newton wouldn't be able to understand TV without first studying our physics for a couple of years. He'd have to learn all the underlying concepts. The electromagnetism, waves, particle physics. These would all be new ideas to him, a new conception of nature. In the meantime, the TV would be magic as far as he was concerned. But to us, it's ordinary. It's TV. You're saying we're like Isaac Newton? Ted shrugged. We're getting a communication, and we don't know how it's done. And we shouldn't bother to try and find out. I think we have to accept the possibility, Ted said, that we may not be able to understand it. Norman noticed the energy with which they threw themselves into this discussion, pushing aside the tragedy so recently witnessed. They're intellectuals, he thought, and their characteristic defense is intellectualization, talk, ideas, abstractions, concepts. It was a way of getting distance from the feelings of sadness and fear and being trapped. Norman understood the impulse. He wanted to get away from those feelings himself. Harry frowned at the spiral image. We may not understand how, but it's obvious what it's doing. It's trying to communicate by trying different presentations. The fact that it's trying spirals may be significant. Maybe it believes we think in spirals, or write in spirals.
Right, Beth said. Who knows what kind of weird creatures we are?
Ted said, If it's trying to communicate with us, why aren't we trying to communicate back? Harry snapped his fingers.
Good idea.
He went to the keyboard. There's an obvious first step, Harry said. We just send the original message back. We'll start with the first grouping, beginning with the double zeros.
I want it made clear, Ted said, that the suggestion to attempt communication with the alien originated with me.
It's clear, Ted, Barnes said.
Harry?
Ted said.
Yes, Ted, Harry said. Don't worry, it's your idea.
Sitting at the keyboard, Harry typed 00032125252632. The numbers appeared on the screen. There was a pause. They listened to the hum of the air fans, the distant thump of the diesel generator. They all watched the screen. Nothing happened. The screen went blank, and then printed out 00011321210518080122. Norman felt the hair rise on the back of his neck. It was just a series of numbers on a computer screen, but it still gave him a chill. Standing beside him, Tina shivered.
He answered us.
Fabulous, Ted said.
I'll try the second grouping now, Harry said. He seemed calm, but his fingers kept making mistakes at the keyboard. It took a few moments before he was able to type 032629. The reply immediately came back. 00152608051801023.
Well, Harry said, looks like we just opened our line of communication.
Yes, Beth said. Too bad we don't understand what we're saying to each other.
Presumably it knows what it's saying, Ted said, but we're still in the dark.
Maybe we can get it to explain itself. Impatiently, Barnes said, What is this it you keep referring to?
Harry sighed and pushed his glasses up on his nose.
I think there's no doubt about that.
It, Harry said, is something that was previously inside the sphere and that is now released and is free to act. That's what it is.
The Monster.
Alarm. Norman awoke to a shrieking alarm and flashing red lights. He rolled out of his bunk, pulled on his insulated shoes and his heated jacket, and ran for the door where he collided with Beth. The alarm was screaming throughout the habitat.
What's happening?
He shouted over the alarm.
I don't know.
Her face was pale, frightened. Norman pushed past her. In the B cylinder, among all the pipes and consoles, a flashing sign winked, Life Support Emergency. He looked for Teeny Fletcher, but the big engineer wasn't there. He hurried back toward C cylinder, passing Beth again.
Do you know?
Beth shouted.
It's Life Support. Where's Fletcher? Where's Barnes?
I don't know. I'm looking.
There's nobody in B,
he shouted, and scrambled up the steps into D cylinder. Tina and Fletcher were there, working behind the computer consoles. The back panels were pulled off, exposing wires, banks of chips. The room lights were flashing red. The screens all flashed, emergency life support systems.
What's going on? Norman shouted.
Fletcher waved a hand dismissingly.
Tell me.
He turned, saw Harry sitting in the corner near Edmonds's video section like a zombie, with a pencil and a pad of paper on his knee. He seemed completely indifferent to the sirens, the lights flashing on his face.
Harry!
Harry didn't respond. Norman turned back to the two women.
For God's sake, will you tell me what it is?
Norman shouted. And then the sirens stopped. The screens went blank. There was silence, except for soft classical music.
Sorry about that, Tina said.
It was a false alarm, Fletcher said.
Jesus Christ,
Norman said, dropping into a chair. He took a deep breath. Were you asleep? He nodded.
Sorry, it just went off by itself.
Jesus Christ. The next time it happens, you can check your badge, Fletcher said, pointing to the badge on her own chest.
That's the first thing to do. You see, the badges are all normal now.
Jesus Christ.
Take it easy, Norman, Harry said. When the psychiatrist goes crazy, it's a bad sign. I'm a psychologist. Whatever. Tina said, our computer alarm has a lot of peripheral sensors, Dr. Johnson. It goes off sometimes. There's not much we can do about it. Norman nodded, went into E-Sill to the galley. Levy had made strawberry shortcake for lunch, and nobody had eaten it because of the accident with Edmonds. He was sure it would still be there, but when he couldn't find it, he felt frustrated. He opened cabinet doors, slammed them shut. He kicked the refrigerator door. Take it easy, he thought. It was just a false alarm. But he couldn't overcome the feeling that he was trapped, stuck in some damned oversized iron lung, while things slowly fell apart around him. The worst moment had been Barnes's briefing, when he came back from sending Edmonds's body to the surface. Barnes had decided it was time to make a little speech, deliver a little pep talk. I know you're all upset about Edmonds, he had said, but what happened to her was an accident. Perhaps she made an error of judgment in going out among jellyfish, perhaps not. The fact is, accidents happen under the best of circumstances, and the deep sea is a particularly unforgiving environment. Listening, Norman thought, he's writing his report, explaining it away to the brass. Right now, Barnes was saying, I urge you all to remain calm. It's 16 hours since the gale hit topside. We just set up a sensor balloon to the surface. Before we could make readings, the cable snapped, which suggests that surface waves are still 30 feet or higher, and the gale is still in full force. The weather satellite estimates were for a 60-hour storm on site, so we have 2 more full days down here. There's not much we can do about it. We just have to remain calm. Don't forget, even when you do go topside, you can't throw open the hatch and start breathing. You have to spend 4 more days decompressing in a hyperbaric chamber on the surface. That was the first Norman had heard of surface decompression. Even after they left this iron lung, they would have to sit in another iron lung for another 4 days? I thought you knew, Barnes had said. That's SOP for saturated environments. You can stay down here as long as you like, but you have a 4-day decompress when you go back. And believe me, this habitat's a lot nicer than the decompression chamber. So enjoy this while you can. Enjoy this while you can, he thought. Jesus Christ. Strawberry shortcake would help. Where the hell was Levy, anyway? He went back to D-Sill. Where's Levy? Dunno, Tina said. Around here somewhere, maybe sleeping. Nobody could sleep through that alarm, Norman said. Try the galley? I just did. Where's Barnes? He went back to the ship with Ted. They're putting more sensors around the sphere. I told them it was a waste of time, Harry said. So nobody knows where Levy is? Norman said. Fletcher finished screwing the computer panels back on. Doctor, she said, are you one of those people who need to keep track of where everyone is? No, Norman said. Of course not. And what's the big deal about Levy, sir? I only wanted to know where the strawberry shortcake was. Gone, Fletcher said promptly. Captain and I came back from funeral duty and we sat down and ate the whole thing, just like that. She shook her head. Maybe Rose will make some more, Harry said. He found Beth in her laboratory, on the top level of D-Sill. He walked in just in time to see her take a pill. What was that?
Valium. God.
Where'd you get it?
Look, she said. Don't give me any psycho talk about it. I was just asking.
Beth pointed to a white box mounted on the wall in the corner of the lab. There's a first aid kit in every cylinder. Turns out to be pretty complete, too. Norman went over to the box, flipped open the lid. There were neat compartments with medicines, syringes, bandages. Beth was right. It was quite complete. Antibiotics, sedatives, tranquilizers, even surgical anesthetics. He didn't recognize all the names on the bottles, but the psychoactive drugs were strong. You could fight a war with the stuff in this kit.
Yeah, well, the Navy.
There's everything you need here to do major surgery. Norman noticed a card on the inside of the box. It said, Med-Aid Code 103. Any idea what this means? She nodded. It's a computer code. I called it up. And? The news, she said, is not good. Is that right? He sat at the terminal in her room and punched in 103. The screen said, hyperbaric saturated environment, medical complications, major fatal, 1.01, pulmonary embolism, 1.02, high pressure nervous syndrome, 1.03, aseptic bone necrosis, 1.04, oxygen toxicity, 1.05, thermal stress syndrome, 1.06, disseminated pseudomonas infection, 1.07, cerebral infarction. Choose one. Don't choose one, Beth said. Reading the details will only upset you. Just leave it at this. We're in a very dangerous environment. Barnes didn't bother to give us all the gory details. You know why the Navy has that rule about pulling people out within 72 hours? Because after 72 hours, you increase your risk of something called aseptic bone necrosis. Nobody knows why, but the pressurized environment causes bone destruction in the leg and hip. And you know why this habitat constantly adjusts as we walk through it? It's not because that's slick and high-tech. It's because the helium atmosphere makes body heat control very volatile. You can quickly become overheated and just as quickly overchilled. Fatally so. It can happen so fast you don't realize it until it's too late and you drop dead. And high-pressure nervous syndrome? That turns out to be sudden convulsions, paralysis, and death if the carbon dioxide content of the atmosphere drops too low. That's what the badges are for, to make sure we have enough CO2 in the air. That's the only reason we have the badges. Nice, huh? Norman flicked off the screen, sat back. Well, I keep coming back to the same point. There's not much we can do about it now. Exactly what Barnes said. Beth started pushing equipment around on her countertop, nervously, rearranging things. Too bad we don't have a sample of those jellyfish, Norman said. Yes, but I'm not sure how much good it would do to tell the truth. She frowned, shifted papers on the counter again. Norman, I'm not thinking very clearly down here. How's that? After the accident, I came up here to look over my notes, review things, and I checked the shrimps. Remember how I told you they didn't have any stomach? Well, they do. I'd made a bad dissection out of the mid-sagittal plane. I just missed all the midline structures, but they're there all right. The shrimps are normal. And the squid? It turns out the one squid I dissected was a little anomalous. It had an atrophic gill, but it had one. And the other squid are perfectly normal, just what you'd expect. I was wrong. Too hasty. It really bothers me. Is that why you took the Valium? She nodded. I hate to be sloppy. Nobody's criticizing you. If Harry or Ted reviewed my work and found that I'd made these stupid mistakes... What's wrong with a mistake? I can hear them now. Just like a woman, not careful enough, too eager to make a discovery, trying to prove herself, too quick to draw conclusions. Just like a woman. Nobody's criticizing you, Beth. I am. Nobody else, Norman said. I think you ought to give yourself a break. She stared at the lab bench. Finally, she said, I can't. Something about the way she said it touched him. I understand, Norman said, and a memory came rushing back to him. You know, when I was a kid, I went to the beach with my younger brother Tim. He's dead now, but Tim was about 6 at the time. He couldn't swim yet. My mother told me to watch him carefully. But when I got to the beach, all my friends were there, body surfing. I didn't want to be bothered with my brother. It was hard because I wanted to be out in the big surf, and he had to stay close to shore. Anyway, in the middle of the afternoon, he comes out of the water screaming bloody murder, absolutely screaming, and tugging at his right side. It turned out he had been stung by some kind of a jellyfish. It was still attached to him, sticking to his side. Then he collapsed on the beach. One of the mothers ran over and took Timmy to the hospital before I could even get out of the water. I didn't know where he had gone. I got to the hospital later. My mother was already there.
Tim was in shock. I guess the poison was a heavy dose for his small body. Anyway, nobody blamed me. It wouldn't have mattered if I'd been sitting right on the beach watching him like a hawk. He would still have been stung. But I hadn't been sitting there. And I blamed myself for years, long after he was fine. Every time I'd see those scars on his side, I felt terrible guilt. But you get over it. You're not responsible for everything that happens in the world. You just aren't. There was a silence. Somewhere in the habitat, he heard a soft, rhythmic knocking, a sort of thumping, and the ever-present hum of the air handlers. Beth was staring at him. Seeing Edmonds die must have been hard for you. It's funny, Thorman said. I never made the connection until right now. Blocked it, I guess. Want a Valium? He smiled. No. You looked as if you were about to cry. No, I'm fine. He stood up, stretched. He went over to the medicine kit and closed the white lid. Came back. Beth said, what do you think about these messages we're getting?
Beats me, Norman said.
He sat down again. Actually, I did have one crazy thought. Do you suppose the messages and these animals we're seeing are related? Why? I never thought about it until we started to get spiral messages. Harry says it's because the thing, the famous it, believes we think in spirals. But it's just as likely that it thinks in spirals, and so it assumes we do too. The sphere is round, isn't it? And we've been seeing all these radially symmetrical animals, jellyfish, squid. Nice idea, Beth said. Except for the fact that squid aren't radially symmetrical. An octopus is. And like an octopus, squid have a round circle of tentacles, but squid are bilaterally symmetrical with a matching left and right side the way we have. And then there's the shrimps. That's right, the shrimps. Norman had forgotten about the shrimps. I can't see a connection between the sphere and the animals, Beth said. They heard the thumping again, soft, rhythmic. Sitting in his chair, Norman realized that he could feel the thumping as well, as a slight impact. What is that, anyway? I don't know, sounds like it's coming from outside. He had started toward the porthole when the intercom clicked, and he heard Barnes say, now hear this, all hands to communications, all hands to communications. Dr. Adams has broken the code. Harry wouldn't tell them the message right away. Relishing his triumph, he insisted on going through the decoding process step by step. First, he explained, he had thought that the messages might express some universal constant or some physical law, stated as a way to open conversation. But, Harry said, it might also be a graphic representation of some kind, code for a picture, which presented immense problems. After all, what's a picture? We make pictures on a flat plane, like a piece of paper. We determine positions within a picture by what we call X and Y axes, vertical and horizontal. But another intelligence might see images and organize them very differently. It might assume more than three dimensions, or it might work from the center of the picture outward, for example. So the code might be very tough. I didn't make much progress at first. Later, when he got the same message with gaps between number sequences, Harry began to suspect that the code represented discrete chunks of information, suggesting words, not pictures. Now, word codes fall into several types, from simple to complex. There was no way to know immediately which method of encoding had been used. But then I had a sudden insight. They waited impatiently for his insight. Why use a code at all? Harry asked. Why use a code? Norman said. Sure. If you're trying to communicate with someone, you don't use a code. Codes are ways of hiding communication. So perhaps this intelligence thinks he is communicating directly, but is actually making some kind of logical mistake in talking to us. He is making a code without ever intending to do so. That suggested the unintentional code was probably a substitution code with numbers for letters. When I got the word breaks, I began to try and match numbers to letters by frequency analysis. In frequency analysis, you break down codes by using the fact that the most common letter in English is E,
and the second most common letter is T, and so on. So I looked for the most common numbers. But I was impeded by the fact that even a short number sequence, such as 232, might represent many code possibilities. 2 and 3 and 2, 23 and 2, 2 and 32, or 232. Longer code sequences had many more possibilities. Then, he said, he was sitting in front of the computer thinking about the spiral messages, and he suddenly looked at the keyboard. I began to wonder what an alien intelligence would make of our keyboard. Those rows of symbols on a device made to be pressed. How confusing it must look to another kind of creature. Look here, he said. The letters on a regular keyboard go like this. He held up his pad. Narrator's note. The pad shows a normal keypad laid out in four horizontal rows as follows. Row 1, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 0. Row 2, tab Q, W, E, R, T, Y, U, I, O, P. Row 3, caps A, S, D, F, G, H, J, K, L, semicolon. Row 4, shift Z, X, C, V, B, N, M, comma, period, question mark. Return to text. And then I imagined what the keyboard would look like as a spiral, since our creature seems to prefer spirals. And I started numbering the keys in concentric circles. It took a little experimentation, since the keys don't line up exactly, but finally I got it, he said. Look here, the numbers spiral out from the center. G is 1, B is 2, H is 3, Y is 4, and so on. See? It's like this. He quickly penciled in numbers. Narrator's note. With the numbers 1 through 15 penciled in over the normal keyboard layout, the following sequence emerges. G is 1, B is 2, H is 3, Y is 4, T is 5, F is 6, V is 7, N is 8, J is 9, U is 10, keypad number 7 is 11, keypad number 6 is 12, R is 13, D is 14, and C is 15. Return to text. They just keep spiraling outward. M is 16, K is 17, and so forth. So, finally, I understood the message. What is the message, Harry? Harry hesitated. I have to tell you, it's strange. How do you mean strange? Harry tore another sheet off his yellow pad and handed it to them. Norman read the short message printed in neat block letters. Hello. How are you? I am fine. What is your name? My name is Jerry. The First Exchange. Well, Ted said finally, this is not what I expected at all. It looks childish, Beth said, like something out of those old Sea Spot Run readers for kids. That's exactly what it looks like.
Maybe you translated it wrong, Barnes said.
Certainly not, Harry said.
Well, this alien sounds like an idiot, Barnes said.
I doubt very much that he is, Ted said.
You would doubt it, Barnes said. A stupid alien would blow your whole theory. But it's something to consider, isn't it? A stupid alien, they must have them.
I doubt, Ted said, that anyone in command of such high technology as that sphere is stupid.
Then you haven't noticed all the ninnies driving cars back home, Burns said. Jesus, after all this effort, how are you? I am fine. Jesus.
Norman said, I don't feel that this message implies a lack of intelligence, Hal.
On the contrary, Harry said, I think the message is very smart.
I'm listening, Burns said.
The content certainly appears childish, Harry said. But when you think about it, it's highly logical. A simple message is unambiguous, friendly, and not frightening. It makes a lot of sense to send such a message. I think he's approaching us in the simple way that we might approach a dog. You know, hold out your hand, let it sniff, get used to you.
You're saying he's treating us like dogs? Barnes said. Norman thought Barnes is in over his head. He's irritable because he's frightened. He feels inadequate. Or perhaps he feels he's exceeding his authority.
No, Hal, Ted said. He's just starting at a simple level.
Well, it's simple, all right, Barnes said. Jesus Christ, we contact an alien from outer space and he says his name is Jerry.
Let's not jump to conclusions, Hal.
Maybe he has a last name, Barnes said hopefully. I mean, my report to Syncompac is going to say one person died on a deep-sat expedition to meet an alien named Jerry. It could sound better. Anything but Jerry, Barnes said. Can we ask him?
Ask him what? Harry said.
His full name.
Ted said, I personally feel we should have much more substantive conversations.
I'd like the full name, Barnes said, for the report.
Right, Ted said. Full name, rank, and serial number.
I would remind you, Dr. Fielding, that I am in charge here.
Harry said, the first thing we have to do is see if he'll talk at all. Let's give him the first number grouping. He typed, 00032125252632. There was a pause, then the answer came back. 00032125252632. Okay, Harry said. Jerry's listening. He made some notes on his pad and typed another string of numbers. 00029213013210613182108142. 06131821081422322. What did you say? Beth said. We are friends, Harry said.
Forget friends. Ask his damn name, Barnes said.
Just a minute, one thing at a time. Ted said, he may not have a last name, you know.
You can be damn sure, Barnes said, that his real name isn't Jerry.
The response came back. 00042122232. He said yes.
Yes what? Barnes said.
Just yes. Let's see if we can get him to switch over to English characters. It'll be easier if he uses letters and not his number codes.
How are you going to get him to use letters?
We'll show him they're the same, Harry said. He typed. 00032125252632. =HELLO. After a short pause, the screen blinked. 00032125252632. =HELLO. He doesn't get it, Ted said. No, doesn't look like it. Let's try another pairing. He typed. 00042122332 =YES. The reply came back. 00042122332 =YES. He's definitely not getting it, Ted said.
I thought he was so smart, Barnes said.
Give him a chance, Ted said. After all, he's speaking our language, not the other way around.
The other way around, Harry said.
Good idea. Let's try the other way around, see if he'll deduce the equation that way. Harry typed, 00042122332, =YES, period. YES, period, =00042122232.
There was a long pause while they watched the screen. Nothing happened.
Is he thinking? Who knows what he's doing?
Why isn't he answering?
Let's give him a chance, Hal, okay?
The reply finally came. YES, period, =00042122232, 23221240000, period, S-E-Y.
He thinks we're showing him mirror images.
Stupid, Barnes said. I knew it.
What do we do now?
Let's try a more complete statement, Harry said. Give him more to work with.
Harry typed, 0004212232, equal sign, 0004212232, YES, period, equal sign, YES, period, 0004212232, equal sign, YES, period.
A syllogism, Ted said. Very good.
A what? Barnes said.
A logical proposition, Ted said.
The reply came back, comma, equal sign, comma. What the hell is that? Barnes said.
Harry smiled. I think he's playing with us.
Playing with us? You call that playing?
Yes, I do, Harry said.
What you really mean is that he's testing us, testing our responses to a pressure situation. Barnes narrowed his eyes. He's only pretending to be stupid.
Maybe he's testing how smart we are, Ted said. Maybe he thinks we're stupid, Hal.
Don't be ridiculous, Barnes said.
No, Harry said. The point is, he's acting like a kid trying to make friends. And when kids try to make friends, they start playing together. Let's try something playful.
Harry sat at the console, typed, equal sign, equal sign, equal sign. The reply quickly came back, comma, comma, comma.
Cute, Harry said. This guy is very cute.
He quickly typed, equal sign, comma, equal sign. The reply came, 7 ampersand 7. Are you enjoying yourself? Barnes said. Because I don't know what the hell you are doing.
He understands me fine, Harry said.
I'm glad somebody does.
Harry typed, capital P, small p, capital P. The reply came, H-E-L-L-O, period, equal sign,
0003212525263 2.
Okay, Harry said. He's getting bored. Playtime's over. Let's switch to straight English.
Harry typed, YES, period. The reply came back, 0004212232. Harry typed, H-E-L-L-O, period. There was a pause. Then, I am delighted to make your acquaintance. The pleasure is entirely mine, I assure you.
There was a long silence. Nobody spoke.
Okay, Barnes said finally. Let's get down to business.
He's polite, Ted said. Very friendly. Unless it's an act. Why should it be an act?
Don't be naive, Barnes said. Norman looked at the lines on the screen. He had a different reaction from the others. He was surprised to find an expression of emotion. Did this alien have emotions? Probably not, he suspected. The flowery, rather archaic words suggested an adopted tone. Jerry was talking like a character from a historical romance.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Harry said, for the first time in human history, you are online with an alien. What do you want to ask him?
His name, Barnes said promptly.
Besides his name, Hal.
There are certainly more profound questions than his name, Ted said. I don't understand why you won't ask him, the screen printed. Are you the entity H.O. in Mexico?
Jesus, where'd he get that?
Maybe there are things on the ship fabricated in Mexico.
Like what? Chips, maybe.
Are you the entity made in the USA?
The guy doesn't wait for an answer.
Who says he's a guy? Beth said.
Oh, Beth. Maybe Jerry is short for Geraldine.
Not now, Beth. Are you the entity made in the USA? Answer him, Barnes said.
Yes, we are. Who are you?
A long pause, then. We are.
We are what?
Barnes said, staring at the screen.
Hal, take it easy.
Harry typed, We are the entities from the USA. Who are you? Entities equals entity.
It's too bad, Ted said, that we have to speak English. How are we going to teach him plurals?